Hi, I'm William Tullett from Anglia Ruskin University in Cambridge.
And I'm Hannah McCann from the University of Melbourne in Australia.
And welcome to the Pandemic Sensory Archive, a collection of voices from sensory experts on the fate of the five senses during and after the COVID-19 pandemic.
This project has been sponsored by the British Academy, and we hope that you enjoy the interview. Just to get us started, do you want to introduce yourself and give us a sense of your expertise when it comes to sight or visuals or visual culture?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm Dr. Elise Dowden. I've got a strange background in a bit of this and a bit of that. So I finished my master's degree in philosophy and didn't know what I was doing with my life, and then decided it would be an interesting idea to go to makeup school. So, because that was just, like makeup and, beauty as a profession and like, just even being a professional esthetician or whatever was like interesting to me. And I thought it could be a possible pathway aside from academia, given the current state of academia. So I went to makeup school and I loved it, and it was really good being able to like learn alongside like a really, really diverse group of people. I think it was all women, and it was just cool. I really liked it, and from there I started like a beauty blog, and I had like an Instagram, and I worked on that quite a like took quite a lot of effort and time, poured quite a lot of effort into that, and over time it got to the point where I was getting sent stuff without like asking for it, and so like I would get sent skincare stuff. I was really more into the skincare than the makeup, but they're kind of intertwined, obviously. And then after a couple of years, I eventually ended up going to Brisbane and doing my PhD in philosophy, and so now my work is really more in the academic space. I don't really do a lot of the beauty stuff anymore, but I still have that background, and I still have a kind of critical perspective about beauty, I think, because of that, and it's also informed the way that I do academic work. So I think it's really interesting thinking about, for example, like the concept of the selfie and what happens when we take a selfie and like the different faces we make when we take selfies. And just even just feminine conceptions of beauty. I'm now, when I follow like influencers, beauty influencers, they tend to be kind of like more experimental or like sort of just not generic conceptions of Western beauty. It sort of seems, sort of more like the focus on the creative artistic element, or just, pushing the boundaries of what's considered beautiful rather than what I was more into when I started makeup school, which was like, just the generic Western beauty thing. So, I guess that's a pretty solid intro.
Wow. I mean, it's a lot of, a really interesting background. And I mean, can you tell us, what was it like being a beauty influencer? Did you did you kind of get obsessed with like how you looked? I mean, I don't know if that's a weird question to ask, but did that become like looks? Did it become an obsession?
Yeah, for sure. And it depends on like who you're with as well. But like when you're with other beauty bloggers and like you go to events and stuff, because a lot of this was in New Zealand before I moved to, because I moved to Brisbane to do my PhD. So, but like if you go to events and stuff, you're like, oh my God, my eyebrows have to be perfect. I cannot have like a thing out of place. And like, I am really, really, still really fussy about like lipstick. If my lipstick's not, like I have a lip liner and it has to be really tidy. I often just don't, I don't wear a lot of lipstick or like stuff that's a bit more finicky anymore, just because I still have like quite a, I don't know, a sort of perfectionist streak with makeup, and if it's not perfect or if it's not quite right, then it's just like, it just bothers me, so it's too much effort. But I know, understand also that that's silly, because most of the time I'm just doing my eyebrows and a bit of mascara now. But I don't know, sorry, I forgot the question.
It's just about how much you end up thinking about how you look, I guess, in that context where you have this big audience of people looking at you.
It definitely puts pressure on you, like when you're taking a selfie, like, and there's definitely some dysmorphia there, like you can't kind of begin to lose sight of like what you look like, in some respects. And yeah, there's a lot of stuff tied up with your self-image when you're being paid, like, to put your image out there. Like, at one point I was getting like facials and like full like I had like a full skincare regime and stuff. I had a bunch of sessions at a beauty salon and stuff, and I had to take photos as part of the contract of my skin, like just my bare face with no makeup on, to like show the progress of my skin and stuff. And sometimes I was just like, oh, I don't like the way I look in this. I'm not wearing makeup. I feel like, ugh. Because, you know, you take a photo before and after a treatment and you can't go back and take that photo again, but you have to just upload it because you're contracted to put that image on the internet, you know? So yeah, sometimes that was a bit weird. It felt like you were selling something that wasn't necessarily, or you weren't super comfortable with selling all the time. I mean, like, I consented to it and I did it, and I don't feel like weird about it or bad about it in hindsight. But yeah, there's definitely something strange happening when you are selling that, as like selling your face as a product almost, you know?
Yeah, wow. I mean, you know, you'd done your philosophy training before this.
Mm.
Were you kind of thinking about the kind of philosophical issues around beauty while you were in it?
Yeah. So some of the work that I did for companies was while I was in Brisbane doing my PhD. So I was like, I had this, it was weird. Like, it was almost like there were two worlds. It was like the world in which I was a beauty influencer and I did makeup stuff and I did my skincare stuff. And then there was this world in which I was like trying to be a serious academic. And it felt like those things couldn't be together. Those things had to be separated. So some of the work that I did, like at World Philosophy Day, I think it was like 2017 or something, I gave a paper on like Kim Kardashian, and like, because she did this International Women's Day selfie, I think in like 2015 or 16. And she got so much like stick for it because everyone was like, oh, you're a bad mother. It was like partially like, I think it was a nude-ish selfie, but there was tasteful kind of, yeah, tape in certain places or something. But yeah, it was just like, I was really thinking at that time about how you represent yourself on the internet, like in these digital spaces, and how you're received, like depending on who you are and like what your body looks like, and yeah, what we're doing when we take these photos, and like who we, yeah, what we think we're presenting, and like how much we can actually see of what we're presenting, like the opacity and the sort of perception from the audiences that we're, yeah, projecting to.
So you were really thinking through these issues, kind of trying to marry these worlds, or maybe keep them apart, it sounds like. But at what point did you just decide you couldn't do the beauty stuff anymore?
That's a good question. I think I just got a bit tired. Like, it was just a lot. Obviously, doing a PhD is a lot. And yeah, it started to take a bit of a mental toll. Like, I think it was probably, it might have actually been when I met my partner and like got more serious about him, because yeah, then I just didn't have time, like doing the PhD and then teaching and then yeah, I was just doing too much, and it was taking up a lot of mental space, having to photograph and having to keep up with contracts and having to just, it's almost like a little part-time job. I mean, some people it's their full-time job, you know, so it was just kind of too much work. Not only the administrative burden, but like the emotional, like mental way of thinking through what am I doing when I say this is an acceptable kind of way to look. This is what, you know, like, and I started to get a bit uncomfortable with selling products, because I had a kind of policy where it was like, I'll never promote something or like write about something that I don't genuinely believe in. But at the same time, when people just send you stuff, you're like, yeah, I guess, like, you know, and then you kind of lose your passion for it because you're like, I guess now I'm just like a walking billboard, you know?
Mm. Yeah, it sounds like it really changes your relation to yourself, but is also something that involves a lot of labor that we wouldn't really kind of think about applying makeup or doing these routines as labor. But in that context, it becomes very obvious.
Yeah, especially when you're like, you got to take photos, you got to edit the photos, you got to maintain like a website, you got to maintain like relationships with PR people, with other bloggers in the community. You got to spend time interacting with other people, engaging with other people. You got to spend time doing contracts and like, yeah, even doing your makeup. Like it got to the point where doing my makeup wasn't fun anymore, and I was like, I don't think that this is worth my time now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so it's not something you've done during the pandemic. You left that before the pandemic started. I mean, how have you felt about beauty and beauty culture and all these kind of visual issues, social media, during this time?
I've kind of tapped out of it to some extent. Like I deleted my Instagram account. I just felt like there was a representation of me on that account that wasn't really me anymore. And yeah, I didn't want to have just like, yeah, I didn't want to be selling something. I wanted to just be, I felt like it wasn't an authentic version of myself or something, if you can have an authentic version of yourself. And also during the pandemic, obviously a lot of us didn't leave our houses very often. And I started to get more comfortable with like how my face was without makeup, and just, yeah, more comfortable not doing your whole makeup routine and not straightening your hair and stuff. And yeah, just, yeah, being comfortable, more comfortable in my own skin. I think it's interesting how not having to be in other people's presence and not having to conform to certain sort of expectations, which may be real or imagined. What that does to your own routines and your own sense of yourself.
Yeah, I mean, do you think, is that something that you think would have changed more broadly? Like, is this something socially where the pandemic has kind of transformed our relationship with things like beauty and ways of seeing, maybe seeing our own faces?
Yeah, I think we're probably, because of the Zoom thing as well, then you're kind of more, you look at your face more. But it's funny, like I'll put makeup on for a Zoom meeting, but I won't put makeup on to like go for a walk in the morning or something, even though more people are going to see me on a walk, I think. It's funny, eh? I don't know.
I mean, I'm the same. Like this interview's all audio, so I was like, oh, I won't do my face, but I have a Zoom meeting later, and I was like, well, better get ready for that.
Yeah.
It's funny because there's such a rhetoric around the fact that people do makeup for themselves. And then it denies the social aspect of that.
Yeah, and I remember like at some point during the pandemic I was Skyping one of my friends and we were working on a project together, and I've known him for like, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years. Like we're pretty good friends. And I was like, oh, sorry, I haven't done my makeup today. And he was like, he made a joke about it. He was like, me neither, you know, like, it's like, what are you even talking about? I can't tell. It's totally fine. And I was like, wait, he can't tell. Ah, you know, like, why am I wasting my time doing this? And so like, yeah, I guess it's funny how even small comments like that make you be like, maybe I am just like, you realize that you are kind of more doing it for yourself than for the other person, especially now when you have like this, you know, the facial touch-up things on Zoom, and you can like put eyebrows and lipstick on Zoom, so you don't even have to do it in real life.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I've noticed there's a bit of there's a lot of moral panic really around filters and you know, this idea that there's been a rise in cosmetic surgeries where people want to look like their Instagram filters and things like that. And I'm always very skeptical of that, because I just think, well, you know, this is giving people some tools to represent themselves in different ways and kind of experiment with their looks on digital social media. But it's like, I don't know, does it translate into this kind of, I don't know.
No, it's like more I feel like it's nice having a temporary way of looking. Like you can change, it's easier to change the way that you look. In the digital representations of yourself. So, yeah, but it also, I don't know, maybe it's just getting older or like getting more comfortable with yourself. But yeah, feeling like your own, like the way that you look is just like good because no one else looks like you is a nice feeling, I think. And I didn't have that feeling when I was really deep in the makeup stuff, or before the pandemic either. So maybe the pandemic has had, yeah, more of an impact on my self-image than I thought.
It's such a tricky thing. I mean, in the research that I've been doing on beauty in a different project, you know, there's this real tension that I can see between people who their experience of the pandemic has been quite liberating in terms of all of the beauty things they used to do, going to salons and also daily routines. And then the kind of other half of people that have just felt so stressed by it and so like losing your sense of self or losing a sense of control of yourself.
That's
a really key theme.
Yeah, I guess it depends on how stable your sense of identity is before, yeah, you lose access to the kind of beauty regimens. Like you know how you fake nails and things like that. I loved having acrylics at first, but then, yeah, I just would never get them again now because they're just so annoying. Now some of that stuff just seems like an unnecessary pain, and I'm just like, what's the point of that? Like, I probably wouldn't wear high heels again. Maybe it's like also everyone's, yeah, I feel like it's more acceptable to not be as feminine now. And I think that that's something that I'm more comfortable with, like not presenting as super, super femme. But yeah, there's a lot in that, eh?
Yeah, it's fascinating because I guess the way I tend to think about it is that we bring a constellation of factors and kind of traumatic experiences and positive experiences to how we relate to these routines, I guess. And that really determines, you know, how we feel about them as punishing or as, you know, painful or as like productive and expressive. Because I mean, it's interesting that you said before that you kind of, when you follow beauty influencers now, you tend to follow the ones that are doing things out of the norm. So they're still engaging with beauty, but they are doing something different, which, you know, is interesting.
Yeah, because for me, like, I think I liked the community aspect of the beauty stuff. Like, when I went to makeup school and makeup was about, like, doing something creative with other people, then it felt authentic and it felt, like, good. It felt really positive. But I think over time it shifted into, like, a kind of job. It shifted into something where it was just me by myself putting something on in order to sell something. That's what it started to feel like. And it wasn't like a passion anymore. It wasn't creative anymore. It was kind of like work. And then that was when it started to be like, not into this anymore. So yeah, when I like stuff that's like really hectic. Like I like heaps of glitter and like bright colors and like, or even just stuff that's a bit weird. Like there's some really cool, I don't know what the right word is, like avant-garde maybe, just stuff that is supposed to be ugly but it's just interesting or beautiful because it's not what the norm is, you know.
Oh, it's fascinating, this kind of tension between, you know, what is authentic and expressive and creative and what is alienated and distorted by beauty culture. And I think it's not clear what that line is.
Yeah, and I think it's a pretty subjective line too, because I'm sure that there are like beauty influencers who are doing kind of more generic or like conventionally acceptable Western stuff that genuinely are having a good time doing it and are genuinely doing it for the community and for the creative aspect. But yeah, and like you do you, you know?
Yeah, no, it's so interesting. I mean, what do you think this future will be around these issues in a kind of post-pandemic world, the shift that's happened?
I don't know. I remember like we already kind of started moving towards less like fully caked on makeup and more towards like natural stuff. I remember there was like a big thing about Glossier and like the boy brow thing, and that was kind of fascinating to me as well, just like the concept of having massive eyebrows that were not like traditionally feminine. Even that was like getting kind of interesting because it just sort of highlighted for me how much, like, I guess how much beauty is just is like the trend sort of element of it. Some of it is a trend, but then once you get used to the trend, then it becomes conventionally acceptable, and then it just gets incorporated into the beauty standards that we have. But I think that there is also like a diversification happening, or like maybe it's just how time happens, like people get more accepting of what is beautiful, or like the horizon of what is considered conventionally attractive is just getting wider and wider. And I think that, yeah, we see that with like even if you look at like, I don't know, big fashion campaigns, most of them are like using models that are sort of diverse. Like there's a big, I guess it was the Black Lives Matter movement, there's like, yeah, a really cool focus on having models that are, yeah, like Black and Indigenous peoples of color, and not just like the classic skinny white cis, you know. So that is cool, but it is also I think someone, yeah, there's also like, you know, when your like banks and like police and stuff just slap a rainbow flag on something and everyone's like, yay, it's, you know, that kind of problematic stuff is also at play as well, I guess.
Yeah, the kind of diversity washing that happens with branding. And it really brings it back to the point you made in your own experiences, which is that you are kind of having a good time being this beauty, you know, person on digital social media until it became exploited, I guess, in a labor sense. Like the economic factors are the things that kind of really alienate and distort, right? Like that sounds like that was part of your experience.
Yeah, absolutely. When I started to feel more like an object and less like a creative subject, like in someone with like agency, that's when I started to feel really like, I don't know, it just didn't feel right anymore, you know?
Oh, it's so interesting to reflect on. I think, you know, those are all the questions I wanted to ask you, but I mean, is there anything else that you wanted to add? I know you do work on, you know, post-humanities. I don't know if there's anything else that you wanted to talk about in terms of sight and visual culture.
Nothing like comes to the front of mind. I guess it's just, I'm glad that the way that we represent ourselves on the internet, like post-digital cultures of beauty are just like really just fascinating. But yeah, maybe like it's a double-edged sword, I guess, because there is like the really cool embracing of like people who don't necessarily fit the mold of what the beauty industry would have conventionally accepted like 10 years ago type thing. But so that's the cool side of it, I think. Like people are getting people are more free to do what they want with their makeup, with their self-expression, especially if you're not going to leave the house with a full face of makeup. You can just do what you want in your room and do something a bit weird, you know.
Yeah,
I don't know what the bad side is. Maybe it's that objectification thing, like how that gets subsumed into like the problems of capitalism and the problems of turning people into objects for profit, you know.
And I feel like that the aspect of it, the kind of profit aspect, is sometimes missing from those discussions of objectification. Well, on that, interesting note, I think we'll wrap it up. So thank you so much for taking the time to chat today.
Nah, all good. Thank you so much for doing this work. It's a really interesting project.
Yeah, great. Thanks.
Sweet.